Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on iTunes or Stitcher and realized that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives available for free. Simply go to howdidigethere.podbean.com. Look on the right-hand column and our entire catalog is easily accessible by month and year. Go hear great conversations with artists like Sweet Spirit, Dwight Twilley, Quiet Company, The Bluebonnets, and literally hundreds more. Just go to howdidigethere.podbean.com and start listening now. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I am your host. Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening. I hope that you all had a great weekend. Maybe a lot of you were at ACL. I was there on Saturday and Sunday. Crazy times. We'll talk about it in just a minute. I have a great show for you guys today. My old friend Thor Harris is here today. He's got a new album, Thor and Friends, coming out this Friday, October 7th. Go to thorharris.org to find out more. Now, Thor has been a musical force in Austin and around the United States and everywhere for a long time. I first met him in 1989 when he was in a band called Stick People with Malford Milligan, the amazing Craig Ross, and the amazing Mark Williams. Some of you might know him as Gumby if you live here in Austin. He plays cello with a lot of bands. Now, anyway, this incredibly unique and beautiful band was one of my favorites when I moved to Austin in 1991, and they broke up shortly after I moved here, like the week after I moved here. Anyway, Thor and I have a great conversation about that stuff. But listen, you might know Thor from many, many bands. He was the drummer of Swans. He was the drummer of Shearwater. He's played with Bill Callahan, Amanda Palmer, Rebecca Cannon, Lisa Germano. And now, just last year, he started Thor and Friends with Peggy Gorbani and Sarah Goat Gautier. It's music that draws on classic minimalist composers like Brian Eno and many people like this. We get into this. I don't know a lot about that stuff. Like the Eno records that I really know. I mean, I do know some of the minimalists, like the small synthesizer records and stuff like Music for Airports. But also, like, I listen to the pop records. I am a pop guy. That's my jam. Thor Harris is not a pop guy. So anyway, I get educated on a lot of cool stuff. A very badass Talk Talk record, which I ended up getting after he left. When we did this interview. And Thor is just an all-around lovely guy. I really love him. He's a beautiful guy. If you live in Austin, they will be playing on Saturday, October 8th at 6 p.m. at End of an Ear. That'll be a record release show. And they are going on tour with Adam Torres October 12th through October 30th doing the East Coast. Thor and Friends. Go to thorharris.org for all your Thor Harris needs. Pick up the Thor and Friends debut LP. It's absolutely gorgeous. I've enjoyed listening to it. I'm looking forward to picking it up on vinyl as I will be there Saturday, October 8th at End of an Ear at 6 p.m. here in Austin. All right? I'll be talking to Thor in just a second. Before we get to that conversation, let me tell you what's going on with me. As I said, I did have a busy weekend. Friday, I went to Houston, played at Continental Club with Skyrocket. Great show, great times, nice people. Came back Saturday, and my friend AJ Vallejo took me to Austin City Limits Festival. Haven't been in a while. It was a great time. Ran into a lot of friends there. Went into a secret food place called the Boom Boom Room, where Tim Love from Lonesome Dove was cooking up some very exotic meats like antelope, goat, and things like that. He was great food, by the way. We went back there and we did have a crazy amount of chicken wings on Sunday. I saw LL Cool J. I saw Cage the Elephant. I saw Haim. I saw a bunch of bands I didn't know, and I saw a guy named Chris Stapleton. All good stuff. Had a great time. Of course, I love Haim. Love seeing them, and it was beautiful. Beautiful getting to see them. Yes. 2 days at ACL Festival. AJ's family came out. His kids came out on Sunday. We had a great time hanging out with them. They love the music. We got some balloon animals made and balloon swords. We had balloon sword fights. All kinds of fun there. I'll post a couple pictures on the How Did I Get Here Facebook page. Anyway, it was all around a really great weekend. If you live in Austin and you're here this Sunday, October 9th, which is John Lennon's birthday, there's a celebration going on. John Lennon's birthday celebration, my friend Stephen Doster and his Number 9 Orchestra featuring Andy Salmon, Tommy Taylor, Bruce Cock. A lot of great people will be out there singing songs. My friend Darren Murphy, I will be singing 3 songs. I'm not going to divulge what songs they are so that they will be a surprise to you if you come to this thing. Okay, I will post the time and stuff. I bet it starts early, like around 6. It's a family show, you know. Just Google it or go to the Thread Gills website. You know, check it out. John Lennon's birthday, Stephen Doster and the Number 9 Orchestra. A lot of guest singers singing as well, including me. Myself, Johnny Gowdy, your friend. All right. Hey, on Saturday, I will be at End of an Ear at 6 p.m. Saturday, October 8th, watching Thor and Friends and picking up, hopefully, one of their debut LPs on vinyl, unless they sell out. Go to thorharris.org to find out what you need to know about him. Find out if they're coming to a town near you when they're on tour October 12th through October 30th on the East Coast. I love Thor. I'm so glad that he came over. I'm so glad that we got to sit down and have this conversation and catch up. He's always been so sweet. I've always been very happy to see him and always been blown away by what an amazing artist he is. That's what he is. He is a walking artist. He's making stuff. He's not interested in copping stuff or hearing stuff that's been done or seeing what the masses are all following. He's into what's interesting and what feels innovative and artistic. So, I hope that you enjoy my conversation with my dear old friend Thor Harris. His album Thor and Friends comes out this Friday, October 7th. Go to thorharris.org to find out more and to find out if he's coming to a town near you. All right, whatever you're doing, I hope that you have a great week. Enjoy my conversation with this beautiful and talented man, my dear old friend Thor Harris. Let's get down.
Called, but it's like the dub reggae mix of Dream River.
Oh, really?
And supposedly that's how Brian Beattie did that.
Oh, really?
Remix, and he said he just got really stoned, and him and Bill were just sitting there at the faders, you know, just like bringing stuff up,
taking stuff down,
yeah,
just feeling it,
just feeling it, playing the console like a instrument.
Do you dabble in the recording part of stuff?
I really don't. It's never grabbed my interest. I mean, I should be interested in it, and I guess I am, but I'd just rather spend the time with an actual instrument.
Yeah.
How
do you lay down your ideas? Do you just come up with them in the moment?
An iPhone voice memo, and then And then I pay someone or beg one of my friends to record me.
You let the beard go.
Yeah, I got rid of that beard.
I was looking forward to it.
It was really hot this summer, and I just thought, I wonder what my face looks like. Had that giant beard for a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny that there's a distinct memory I have of when I moved here, seeing you on your bicycle like every few months. That big smile on your face. Always such a great thing to see.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still riding my bike almost everywhere. I rode here.
Yeah, you did. I read a thing. I read it a while back. It was all these things about having a good life, like don't smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't be an asshole.
Yeah, I wrote this list for touring musicians called How to Tour in a Band or Whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, for years I was like, come on, there's got to be a part 2. But then Ah, oh, look, my maps are still on. There's got to be a part two. And I didn't come up with a part two for that list because that list was really complete. You know, it's just about like how to live with others. But I noticed there were so many poor people making idiotic financial decisions. So I decided to write a how to that list. The second one is called How to Survive. No, How to Live Like a King on Very Little.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really possible.
Yeah. One of them is you can't keep yourself healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, barring the catastrophic illness or something that comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, abandon the American diet. Like, abandon the food you might have grown up on. I certainly did abandon the starch and meat diet.
Yeah.
That many, many, many Americans... Or they just grow up on it and never rethink it.
Well, also your body kind of craves it.
Yeah, once you're used to that stuff.
I've noticed that you can't, I mean, if you make a concerted effort, like to get off of fast food.
Yeah.
Your body does crave it, but after a little while, if you give in to a craving and you've stayed away from it long enough, you taste how bad it is.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the funkiness. Like all of a sudden fries, you taste like this old grease poison carcinogenic cooking stuff they have.
Yeah, you become sensitized to stuff that you once thought was delicious.
Mm-hmm. Did you grow up, like, how did you grow up?
I grew up kind of in south coastal Texas.
Okay.
Kind of just on... We were on the coastal side of Houston, near Galveston.
Okay. I was just there. Saturday, I played in Kima.
Oh, yeah. That's right by where I grew up.
Okay.
Right there. La Porte is the name of my town.
Yeah, that's the... My directions were telling me to take the La Porte exit.
Yeah.
So what's that like? I was noticing when I was going down there that there's something about that Gulf Coast region and the people...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's kind of magical down there.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, I guess Houston is pretty conservative and probably votes Republican in some elections, but they do have an openly lesbian mayor.
Yeah.
And La Porte is a magical place because, you know, they do care a lot about football because it is still Texas, but... Where I grew up, there is this huge drama department where all the artistic kids and all the queers and all the freaks would go and congregate and put on a huge musical production once a year, starting in about October, starting right about now. They'll start, and I go back. And work on the...
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I go back and work on the set designs with them. This lady named Sonia Angelo started the program in the 60s, and she's still around, and she retired from teaching years ago, but she still comes back and works on the play every year. And
do they write the play, or do they pick a play?
They pick one of the classic musicals, like Music Man or Oklahoma or The Wiz.
Yeah.
And just do really elaborate sets and huge dance numbers with hundreds of kids in them.
That's amazing.
It's pretty neat. And so...
I imagine in that part of Texas, too, it's not the most open-minded place that those guys and probably you and somebody like me would have been marginalized a bit.
Yeah, we certainly could have been. But then, like... 10 years ago or so, there was this kid, obviously gay kid, who became like the most popular kid in school just because he was such a talented artist and he was part of that theater program. He was just like, everybody knew this kid.
Yeah.
Such a neat thing to see in South Texas of all places.
Were your parents artsy? Because you are an art, like you're a guy that's just an artist. That's what I think. Like you're making music, you're painting, you're doing something, you're making something and putting something in the world where there was once nothing. You know?
Yeah. My dad was a mechanical engineer. Mm-hmm. Like he was he loved tools and fixing things and building things, but he was also an artist. He was a painter and a sculptor. And my mom's a public school teacher. She's retired now, but yeah, there was art. Art was in, it was a big part of our household.
That's
great. It was thought of as important.
How did you start in music? Like, did they?
I loved the Jackson 5 when I was really little, like maybe 5 years old, and they took me to see the Jackson 5.
Oh, wow.
And
do you remember where?
At the Astrodome. Yeah, it was amazing because the Jacksons, they rode around I remember there was nobody sitting on the floor, and I think the show was in the round, and they had the Astrodome set up like for a rodeo or something. Right. And the Jacksons drove around in a circle in the Astrodome in a convertible limousine, you know, so they could get a little bit closer to the crowd. Yeah. And then when they played the show, it was like in the middle of the Astrodome on, I think, a spinning platform.
Yeah.
And
I saw shows like that there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. And amazing that my parents took me to see it. And man, I just thought Michael Jackson was the coolest. And he's a few years older than me. But yeah, for when I was a little kid, I wanted to be Michael Jackson. And then when they offered school band, I said, yeah, I want to play drums.
Yeah.
And mom was, she was always, my mom is a great lady. She was always down for whatever we wanted to do.
Yeah.
And supportive.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have an older sister, she's 7 years older, and an older brother, he's 2 years older.
Oh, wow.
And neither of them pursued the arts, but they're really brilliant, kind, generous people that I'm still really close with. My sister's a high school history teacher. She's a super history nerd, and my brother is an electrician.
Yeah. So did you, you joined band?
Yeah, I was in band through college.
What did you play?
I played drums. Snare drums? Yes, I played snare drum and all the other things.
Like band, not marching band?
I was in marching band, okay. Yeah. And like symphony, like stage band. Okay. The whole thing, it was like sort of a package deal down there. During football season, if you were in band, you were probably in marching band. And then in the off season, I guess we just worked on symphony music for concerts.
Yeah.
And yeah, I did that. And then in college, I studied piano and percussion some more at Stephen F. Austin, you know, that school in way East Texas.
Yeah.
You're a native Texan too, aren't you?
Kind of. I mean, I've lived here on and off all my life, but I've lived in Texas since 1987. Straight without living anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. I lived in Houston. That's where I met you.
Yeah. And yeah. At Fitzgerald's probably with Panjandrum.
Panjandrum. Yeah.
Do you have to talk to any of those guys anymore?
I do. Well, me and the guitar player from Panjandrum started Mr. Rocket Baby here.
Oh, yeah.
And I see him every once in a while. And I still talk to almost everyone from that band.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good guys.
Yeah.
I remember, you went to Stephen F. Austin is in Nacogdoches?
Yeah, and that's where I met Craig Ross.
Was he going to school there?
He was.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did he get to Nacogdoches? Oh, he's from Houston, right?
He's from Houston. I just wonder how he got here. I think that he got most of the way through a psychology degree and then finished it at what was then called Southwest Texas University.
All right. Texas State.
Texas State, yeah, because he wanted to move to Austin, which was a great move, you know.
What year were you were taking, you did you graduate?
I did not. Okay. I moved here in 85.
Okay.
After mostly studying music, and I was going to finish an art degree just so that my mom would, you know, feel happy that I had finished college, because that was really important to her. She grew up during the Depression, so people who had a college degree maybe would get hired and everybody else just had to go work the fields or whatever. I don't know.
Can you spare a dime?
Yeah, exactly. But I didn't. I went to UT for a year and just had had enough. And I started working at Thundercloud, and all the freaks worked there, you know. So that's started meeting some of the most awesome people in Austin and playing in a bunch of bands, and it was over for me in college.
That was an exciting time. Like, it was 85?
85,
there was, like, Timbuk3.
Yeah.
And, like,
Glass Eye. Butthole Surfers.
The Butthole Surfers. Daniel Johnston was doing stuff.
He was still very much around town all the time. Tons of great, really weird bands.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think it's even better now in a way. There's more of everything. There's more people watching bands. There's more weirdo musicians of different kinds now than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it was great in that there was less traffic and rent was $200. But, you know, if it had stayed like that, I might have gotten bored here.
Right. But that was an exciting, I mean, it just kind of like in a moment of music, there was a lot of there were people making new music,
mm-hmm.
you know, and doing things in a different way, which is the way I've always perceived you as a person that totally colors outside the lines.
Yeah.
You know, and like when you step back, you see like the beauty of what you've created
out of what someone gave you,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even like when I remember when we used to do shows with you or go see you guys, it was always very exciting to see what kind of drum set you would create make a kick drum out of an orange cone.
I remember
you did that once. And just like all that stuff was very exciting to like see it and be around it and like seeing guys that weren't just playing straight up rock and roll. Because you guys were a very different band.
Yeah, that Stick People was a weird band. It was good. I am really proud of the work we did back then.
Yeah, and it was Malford Milligan and Craig Ross, you and Gumby.
Yeah.
And that's definitely an odd combination of dudes. But it made for a very unique sound and voice.
Yeah. Yeah, and we had some strange influences, a lot of prog rock influence with a lot of soul and R&B because Malford, you know, black dude who was like maybe 10 years older than us. I think Malford, I don't know how old he is now.
I think he is like that.
Yeah, he's close to 60.
Yeah. Everyone's getting so old. Like you were in your early 20s then, right?
Yeah, that was in 85. I was 20. I'm 51 now.
Yeah.
So I've lived here 26 years. No, wait.
No, 36.
36 years. Wow.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
So, remember Water the Dog was a band from that time?
Yeah,
too,
Water the Dog with Brian
Keeling.
Keeling, yeah, such a nice guy. Yeah. Where is he?
He is in, I talked to him a lot, in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Really?
Lived in L.A., lived in Nashville, and then fell in love and moved to Lincoln.
Man, that is the only reason I could think of to move to Nebraska. I've been there.
Yeah.
Love. I mean, you know, I'm sure it has its beauty, but...
Was Stick People the first band that you started touring around with?
It was, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
How was that? Was that exciting?
It was really fun, and Craig and I, we were the two real workhorses of that band. I mean, there's always a couple of guys that are at every load-in and load-out.
Yeah.
And that was me and Craig. And though we didn't always see eye to eye, we, you know... The sort of brotherhood that we had on the late night drives in that band was pretty great.
Yeah. How far did you guys ever tour with Yeah. I saw you. You toured with Poi Dog Pondering.
Yeah, we toured with that terrible band, Poi Dog Pondering. That's full of some really nice people.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think they're terrible?
I never cared for their music.
Oh.
But I liked them as human beings quite a bit.
There was a couple songs I liked, but I remember one time I saw them under the influence of acid, and I wanted to know what the fuck they were so happy about.
Yeah, that was what, I guess sometimes when music's that, I don't know, it was like too happy for me or something, but I think I like some happy music, but there has to be like a touch of something sort of dark in it.
Right.
But.
So it's hard to, when I hear the music that you make and all the bands that you've been involved with, it's hard to imagine for me, like you hanging out listening to Boston, because it seems like a little just too easy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. What were you listening to? Like Eno, obviously. There's
a lot of Eno. I listened to a lot of Peter Gabriel's first four records were super important to me. I did listen to Boston in like eighth grade, sure. But then I parted ways. I mean.
Yeah, when did you get, like, an enlightened sort of, like, okay, that stuff's...
kind of dumb.
Square, yeah.
Yeah. It sort of started to come with, I think, with Peter Gabriel. Like, when I was probably in about eighth grade, I started to discover all these sort of, you know, by reading the liner notes and seeing, oh, Brian Eno produced this. What else does he do?
Right.
And so I started, looking into his ambient works. And I remember a really early important record to me was the soundtrack from The Exorcist by Mike Oldfield?
Yeah.
That was just like a 45-minute instrumental record with sort of like 4-minute movements in it. And I thought that was really... brilliant.
Yeah.
And I was really young when I started listening to that. And I've the huge instrumental pieces on a couple of those Bowie records, those I thought were the greatest thing.
Yeah, they're awesome.
I mean, I do like Bowie's pop songs too, but I thought that was just so amazing to put a 12-minute instrumental piece on a pop record.
Aren't the first four Peter Gabriel albums all titled Peter Gabriel?
Yeah. I think they are. and I got to meet that drummer. I was working on a classical record in upstate New York, and that drummer Jerry Murata.
Yeah. Oh, that's that guy on there.
Yeah.
Wow.
He played drums on those first Peter Gabriel records, and I must have seen him live in 1979 when I saw Peter Gabriel at the Houston, what was that thing called, the Performance Hall or something like that, performing.
Downtown?
Yeah, it was right by the Coliseum.
Yeah.
It was like a kind of nice theater.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw Camelot there.
Oh, yeah. I saw some plays there, too. I remember calling it was a performance hall. But, it was just an old sort of decrepit theater.
What was his show like in 1979? Because...
I think Shock the Monkey was... a big hit single, and he was still wearing weird makeup.
Yeah.
And I think he had Jerry Murata, Tony Levin. Who was the guitar player?
I don't know.
Somebody interesting. It wasn't, he might have.
It wasn't like Adrian Belew or something like that.
I don't think it was Adrian Belew. I'm a huge Adrian Belew fan. That was another path, the King Crimson path, that led me into like really weird music.
Weird music.
Yeah. I mean, every period of that band is weird and interesting.
Yeah. What's the album with the big face, The Court of the Crimson King?
Yeah, that's the first one.
Used to scare the piss out of me when I was a kid, man.
And what a masterpiece. That drummer, Michael Giles, I have no idea what he did after that, but... he's just an amazing drummer.
Are you friends with Pat Mastalotto?
A little bit. Yeah, we're acquaintances. Nice. Does he still live here?
I think so.
Cool.
He was living in Dripping Springs a couple years ago when I saw him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, such a nice guy. I know him and Gumby were pretty tight. They had a band together.
With a girl. What was it called? Mastica.
Mastica.
Yeah, that was great.
Monica played, she played clarinet and other weird things in that band.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a super good woodwinds player.
Yeah.
I don't know how much she plays anymore, but about 4 years ago, Rob Halverson called her up and said, come over to my studio, you and Thor, and I want you guys to just improvise on clarinets. And we did a bunch of recording together. I don't think anything ever came of it. It's probably still on some hard drive that Rob has. But yeah, Monica, I think she's still around.
As a quick aside, how many times have you gone to experiment on something in the studio and just never came out or something? So there might be tons of unreleased.
Quite a few.
Music out there.
Yeah, I think quite a few. Certainly with Rob Halverson, he's he's got to keep pretty busy and pretty productive now. He's got bills to pay, and that studio is his bread and butter. So there's not as much of like, let's block out several days just to make weird noises and see if we feel like it's something we should finish. So we haven't done as much of that lately.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love doing that. And I hope, I mean, the very nature of, quote, experimental music means that some of it's going to just be awful and unlistenable, and you're going to come to your senses and discard it. But right. Yeah, that is.
But that makes discovering the great shit so much more magical.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. Have you know what I listened to this weekend to go to sleep in my hotel rooms was have you heard the Stranger Things soundtrack from those guys that
those are Austin guys, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that, but I was a fan of their old band Survive.
Yeah.
That band's great.
Amazing. And same kind of sensibilities, you know.
I wanna listen to that.
It was on Spotify.
Okay.
Yeah.
The soundtrack to
there's
Stranger
like two
Things.
It's very long. There's a couple of volumes on it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I'm gonna seek that out.
And
thanks for
that,
the tip.
It's got that same, I guess they didn't use anything, like the show is set in like 1982 or 83. So they didn't use any equipment that was newer than that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Those kind of limitations can really can really stimulate creativity.
Yeah.
I know on one of those early Peter Gabriel records, he said no cymbals on the whole record. And it really does have a certain timbre for having discarded that option.
Yeah. That's kind of like one of those oblique strategies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, trying something and just giving yourself those parameters and having to work within them.
Yeah.
I do that to myself when I get confused. Because sometimes when you have too many options...
Yeah, we have this new band, Thorin Friends, and it's mostly orchestral percussion. And I remember one moment we were recording at Rob's house, and Rob showed us this sound on a synthesizer. And Sarah Gauthier, who I call Goat, I could tell she was excited about this sound. And I just said, no, we really shouldn't go down that path because this isn't really a synthesizer record. And
right.
If we open that door, like, we might not ever find our way out of there. And so we resisted. There are some...
There's some synths on there, right?
Yeah, there's some synths on the newer, on the new one. That one didn't come out. We still have those recordings, but... And maybe we'll put them out sometime. But the newer one has John Dietrich from Deerhoof. So even when he plays guitar, it sounds, like, bizarre. You know, it could be a synth. It's so strange, and it was amazing to watch him play guitar because he does all these things like it's sort of like prepared guitar. There's like tape and paper shoved in behind the bridge that it's all muted and, you know, rattling, and it was really interesting. It was like I had heard those sounds on Deerhoof records for years and not known what they were or thought they were xylophones or something, but it was Dietrich playing guitar.
Yeah. It's you're playing, are you playing vibes on the record or marimba or what's the
Vibes, marimba, xylophone, and then Goat plays some mellotron and organ. Me and Jeremy Barnes, he's the drummer from Neutral Milk Hotel, and him and his wife are a band called Hawk and a Hacksaw. They both played on it, Jeremy and Heather. They played on it also. She played violin and sang and played keyboards. And me and Jeremy played a little bit of drums, but not much. There's not many drums on the new Thorin Prinz record. No. I should have brought you a copy of it, but I'll get you one.
Okay. It's coming out on vinyl too, right?
It is, yeah.
Hey, what's the label?
It's called LM Duplication. And that's their label, Jeremy and Heather.
It's a funny name.
Yeah. Living Music Duplication. And they wanted to put out somebody who was alive and not like living in Eastern Europe or somewhere that, you know, that would never come tour in the U.S. Because all like their artists are, do you know John Jacob Niles?
Uh-uh.
Oh, he's the most amazing singer.
Huh.
Appalachian guy. Lived into his 90s, I think. But he died maybe 10 or 20 years ago. just an amazing singer. Every bit as amazing as Nina Simone. Just such control and beautiful, emotive voice. LM Duplication put out, reissued some of his recordings and then a lot of Eastern European stuff.
That's awesome.
That's pretty interesting. They're really into that. Hawk and a Hacksaw play Romanian folk music a lot with accordion and violin. They're sweet people and they really made this record happen.
Did you do it in their studio and you recorded in New
in
Mexico?
Albuquerque, yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Was How great. Was that? How long did you stay there?
We were only there about 3 days, but I love to work really fast,
yeah.
and we knew exactly what we wanted to do. I don't believe in overthinking records. Maybe it works for somebody. I know that record, you know, I like to say that, but then I like to say one of my favorite records is Talk Talk Laughing Stock. And that record was clearly overthought, you know? They had so many musicians come in and play on it, and the record company hated it and sued them, in fact, for spending so much money to make it, and they thought it was terrible. Now it's, like, critically adored.
But the band Talk Talk?
Yeah, by that band Talk Talk. Yeah. Their very last record was like a suicide bullet to the head. It was a commercial flop at the time. Now it's still talked about. There's a new book about the record.
Really?
Yeah, it's just an amazing record. There's nothing like it. It's its own thing. And certainly a period of that band Shearwater was mm-hmm. kind of based on that record.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
We studied that record all the time. And Talk Talk Laughing Stock is such an interesting story, and the band kind of gave up after that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that Talk Talk did.
Talk Talk did, yeah.
What's going on with Shearwater? They're still playing?
Shearwater is still a band, yeah. There's no one left in it but Jonathan,
uh-huh.
and he's been going through members pretty fast. I think people have joined and quit, so it's sort of, you know, what they do now isn't my thing, you know, but that's why I left. We did have a meeting for a while and where we could be creative together. And then swans started to really consume my life. And Jonathan and I were seeing eye to eye a lot less. And the making of that record Animal Joy was miserable for me, but it was like Jonathan's favorite, you know, recording. So, you know, it was clear we were just not on the same page anymore.
Yeah. How was it working with Swans? That's a really interesting band.
It's difficult. It's very difficult to work with Michael, but he's also a very loyal and generous friend. I love that band. It was my favorite band, and I just basically stalked them and said, you should hire me. I want to be in your band. And so they did. Yeah,
I started listening to them because you joined them.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I joined in the mid-90s, and when it was called Angels of Light. Michael had disbanded Swans and was moving on to something else, but then I was on a few of those records and tours.
Okay.
And then I got busy with Shearwater, and the Akron family took over as the main band for Angels of Light.
Okay.
And then we reformed Swans in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And toured the world until now, and they're on their final tour is that band, but I'm not doing it. My mom is 88, and I fell madly in love with this lady Peggy Gorbani, and she plays in Thorin
plays
Friends.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, and I wanted to spend more time with my ladies, Peggy Gorbani and my mom. And
where's your mom? Is she here? Is she in?
She lives on now. She lives on this side of Houston in Katy.
Okay,
right near my sister, so my sister can kind of look after her. I love those men in the Swans, but it was time for a change. Yeah, it's really loud. That music is so loud, and it did allow me to learn several new instruments. I learned trombone, and I built this weird viola, electric viola, for it, because it was hard to come up with instruments that did long piercing drones that didn't decay, you know, the way you pluck a guitar string right. And it decays. There right. were a plenty of those things in that band, but what it needed was something that I could play long, solid tones on.
And you would bow it.
And I would bow it, yeah. It was a electric viola. No acoustics to the thing. It was solid body and just, I still have it, but I haven't used it since I stopped playing with Swans.
Okay. Hey, let me ask you something. What did you do at the Stick People broke up in 91? Can I tell you the sad news? So I moved here on Will Sexton's 21st birthday because I was going to move here a couple days later. But he's like, if you come today, you can come to my birthday. So I went to his birthday. And then I think a few days later, I saw you guys were playing. What was Cheer Up Charlie's in the...
Chances. It was a lesbian
bar. Is that where you played your last show?
We probably did play our last show there. That sounds right.
I'm all stoked. I just moved to town like a week or two before.
Yeah.
Going to see Stick People. I'm like, I moved to the right place. I can't remember if it was you or Gumby that was like, yeah, this is our last show. When I saw you guys, I was like, no. But I was glad I was there for it.
Yeah. I'm glad you were there too.
What did you do after that?
I went insane after that.
Make t-shirts? No,
there was a guy named Grant that painted t-shirts,
that's
and
right.
he and I looked a lot alike back then. People would mistake us for each other.
Okay.
And Grant is still my friend. He is one of the main sculptors for Austin Bike Zoo, which is these bike-propelled sculptures that look like animals. Like there's an owl, and then there's a snake skeleton that's about 80 feet long.
Where can you see these?
If you go to austinbikezoo.com, okay. I think that they have an events calendar, and they just do things like parades and festivals and public events, and they have butterflies, like these butterflies with silky wings that...
That's awesome.
It's amazing. And my friend Jeremy is the main guy. He's a mechanical engineer who just never had any desire to work a real job. So he builds these mobile sculptures and it's so inspiring. It's just, you know, it all takes place like four blocks from my house. So I can just ride down there and see that, you know, those guys are like spending months building this giant armadillo out of steel and brass and styrofoam.
Yeah.
So good that, you know, it's scarier and scarier as the rent gets more expensive. Like, how are all these artists going to make it in Austin? But for the time being, there's still so many creative people just doing really weird things in this town.
Yeah. The rent is going up, but the thing about it is that to me, and I want to be able to see things from all sides.
Yeah.
Like, right now, like, Detroit is like the Austin that we came to at some, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Super cheap rent, a bunch of artists, people all kind of living together and doing the thing.
Yeah.
And this town's just kind of taken a different turn. I mean, we're all still here.
Yeah.
And we're able to do stuff, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, I still love it. And now, you know, like, I love seeing old friends like you.
Yeah.
That does happen, you know, when I'm out and about. For the last 6 years, it has happened considerably less because I've been on the road about half of the time with Swans, but, you know.
Let me ask you, so let's talk about this record real quick. It's just Thor and Friends. It's the debut LP,
mm-hmm.
Self-titled, comes out October 7th.
Yeah.
Yeah, October 7th. Featuring Peggy Gorbani,
mm-hmm.
that's your girlfriend, and Sarah Goat Gautier.
Yep.
You're going to be on tour from October 12th through the 30th with Adam Torres and even some other people in some of those, but it's, you're also playing with Adam?
Yeah, both bands will play with both bands.
Oh, awesome.
So it's an economical and fun way to tour. We did that with that band Wyoke, where they're great. They're a Baltimore band, but they, you know, slowly they started playing in Shearwater's set, and then Shearwater we would all start creeping onto stage during their set. And Hospital Ships was, I think, the third band that was on that tour. And, you know, by the end of the tour, everyone was just on stage all the time.
That's great.
Really fun.
So you're going to be, where are you going?
We're going on this tour. We're going to tour the U.S. We're going to head east through Houston, New Orleans, and then head up the East Coast. I think we'll be in New York on October 20th. And then we'll do a few shows in Canada, which is kind of where this band started. A Montreal promoter asked me to do a solo show, and I did, and it was terrifying. Just standing up there with just a huge marimba and a vibraphone playing by myself. So I decided to do the next solo show with a couple of other musicians, because I had already had it booked in San Antonio, so I got a violinist, and I taught Peggy some parts on marimba and xylophone. And then, like, when musicians see Thor and Friends, it's music. The starting place is like Moondog, Steve Reich, Terry Riley, Philip Glass, all those mid 20th century minimalist weirdos, which is music that every musician and music geek loves, you know. It was before punk rock, but it was like really just an awesome, you know. It's also sort of based on John Cage. The minimalists were, you know, sort of deciding that music didn't need to be about, that classical music didn't need to be about virtuoso. It could be more about emotion or about feeling
and mood.
And it could be about hypnotic states and the neurological effects of space and silence. And, you know, so music sort of got turned on its head, if that's the right term.
Yeah.
But by those composers. And so when musicians see us play, that, you know, like John Sanchez, he was like, man, I want to play in that band. Well, of course, John Sanchez wants to play in your band.
Yeah.
Yes. So he came and played. I want him to come back. John, if you hear this podcast, please come back and play with us. It would be, you know, I could just text him, but I got to think of that at the right time to
do it.
He's
one of my guitar heroes.
Such an interesting dude. He's been doing, you know, like, how could I leave Austin with, like, all these interesting people still here. I do think about leaving. I don't like the heat. And
where would you go?
Yeah, that's the question. Plus, like, I couldn't permanently leave. I know. I couldn't do that. But
Have you ever thought to move to, like, L.A. or New York?
New York. When I was younger, I thought about New York. Yeah. But then I joined the Swans, so I was forced to spend a lot of time in New York City, where I kind of lived there. Mostly I was living out of people's, like, closets and stuff, because that's how you live up there. But I got over my desire to live there so quickly, you know, because I'm sure you've done this. When you're on tour, you drive to New York. It's so exciting. You see beautiful people everywhere. You see your old friends, because you got a lot of friends up there, of course. Yeah. And it's such a rush, and you're awake for, you know, like 20 hours a day, and you're eating all this amazing food. But then when you drive out, you feel so good when you start to see, like, nature and chaos again.
Yeah.
You know, things that are not put there by humans. Just, you know, it's just such a breath of fresh air. And you know, these days I more think about living somewhere even more sort of natural than here. And I think this place does offer a lot of natural beauty, but I would like to live in mountains at some point. I've never really lived, only on tour have I lived through a real winter.
Oh yeah.
Like from a tour bus where, you know, and that's like, we were in Montreal in the dead of winter loading in the snow. And, Oh, I never finished in 91. I never finished that story. I got really like my first bout of horrible clinical depression, partially because of the demise of Stick People, which I thought I was just bad at letting go of things. You know, my dad died when I was 10, which, you know, I should be good at letting go of things. But in 91, when that band broke up, my brain just went into some horrible place. So I ended up moving to San Francisco to sort of try to get back on my feet, thinking that geography was the problem. But I took my brain with me, and it turned out that was the problem.
Yeah.
And so I moved back in with my sister in East Texas a few months later and got on antidepressants and started going going to therapy once a week. I mean, I was suicidal by that point. It was the darkest time of my life. I was 27. And I was just, I don't know. I kind of like my brain sometimes, but there is a glitch in it that generates horrible depression. And I didn't know that until that time. And so it took me the better part of a year to sort of fight my way out of that and keep from killing myself. And that, I turned a lot of corners, like creatively then. Like it sort of left me a lot more brave and less tolerant of my own mediocrity. It was a time of great revelation for me. I think late 20s is early for 30s, a lot of yeah. early for yeah, a lot yeah. of people. There's, I'm not one to believe in astrology, but there's something to that Saturn return thing. People going through these huge painful shifts in their late 20s.
I don't know what it is, but so many people, I went through, you know what's so weird is I went through it, and then I went into therapy. I was going like twice a week. It was like, and it was the same kind of thing. It was kind of the end of this whole, like, you know, my band had this big deal, and then everything kind of like, once you got in the big machine, you're like, this is it. Like, this sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Like, nobody here is doing, there's just no soul mm-hmm. in anything being done. It was just really freaky. It was all calculated and weird and just not any fun. And I was really left bummed out. And I was going to therapy twice a week, and that's through Sims and stuff.
Yeah. Bless going Sims. Through, yeah, such a good thing.
Totally. And then a few years later, I started painting a place with you that you were heading up this crew, and that was the place. Like, I remember painting the room where I cried in.
Oh, man.
That place that we painted that's over there by Austin High.
Oh,
across
yeah.
from where the Omelet Tree used to be. Or Magnolia, whatever Magnolia is there.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, yeah, it's a vet clinic. Yeah, I just remembered that you worked on that crew. That was such a great crew of people.
Yeah.
I just got, like, anyone who wasn't employed and said, come paint this giant building with me. And
yeah.
Oh, that was so great.
Yeah, that was fun. But it was an interesting cathartic experience, like painting the room, like changing the color of the walls. It was because I felt like, you know, I had gotten that thing out of me, and then I went back to the room where I got it out of me and changed the look of it.
That's so great.
Yeah.
That's such a good story.
Yeah. But that is interesting. How do you keep it at bay now?
I still take meds, and I read a lot about psychology and neuroscience, and I also have to still get a ton of exercise, or my chemistry goes very sour very quickly.
Yeah. I learned that after my mom died, I was like 17, and I remember I had to go to this Catholic school, and this brother, the best advice I ever got, he was like, just run.
Yeah. It's
run
amazing.
Run it out. It's like a puppy. Like, just get it out of you and run. And it is amazing how that can keep
you. And do you still run?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, I'm running from something that's coming after me.
Yeah. Good. Keep running.
Yeah. Yeah, it's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And you ride your bike everywhere, too.
Yeah.
So, But you also, you got to have some kind of van to take all this crazy marimbas and
microphones. We just bought a new marimba that is gigantic, but it does fold up. So yeah, Adam owns a big Chevy conversion van. So both bands will barely fit in that thing with all of our ridiculous amounts of gear.
Yeah.
A xylophone, vibraphone, and marimba, and a drum set to play with Adam.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a lot of gear.
What kind of drum set do you play now when you play a drum set?
They're like, it's all either old, I use a Ludwig snare drum from the 20s. Wow. But I have several snare drums that I made. Then I use a kick drum that I made and some congas that I made for Adam's band. So since the beginning of Stick People, I've never had a full drum set of anything. It's all just pieces that I sort of cobble together for any given job. So I have a lot of mismatched pieces.
It's cool.
Yeah, I got really poor my early, I guess when I was 19, sold my drum set, started playing the drum set that I grew up playing, and then just like building weird stuff to use. So when you and I met, I was like playing, you know, pipes and chunks of wood and stuff, just, you know, out of poverty. But then I was like, wow, this is way more interesting than anything I can buy anyway.
I can't tell you how eye-opening that was.
Oh,
I mean,
good.
Were definitely like a musician that my whole band was just like, what the fuck is that guy doing? Like, what is he doing?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what gave me the nerve to do that back, you know, in my early 20s.
You have that nerve.
I have that 20s. Nerve.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have that too.
Yeah, you know? Fearless.
Yeah.
I try to still be fearless, but with more information, you know.
Yeah.
You got to remember to forget some stuff.
Yeah.
In order to remain fearless.
Yeah. So people can pick up this debut record. It came out on vinyl as well, right?
Yeah, it's on vinyl and CD. Delicious. And all those, you know, download platform things. And it's called Thor and Friends, and it's just self-titled.
Yeah. I watched a video that you did with Pitchfork.
Oh, yeah.
Guiding at the Pitchfork Festival.
That was fun.
That was great.
You know what I'm going to do it right after this? I'm going to go guest DJ for Pitchfork.
Oh, awesome.
I'm going to play some records that I like. That's the funnest thing in the world to do, is to, like, play music and rant about it, about the music that you love.
Yeah.
Like, that's a dream job for me, to be a DJ.
Yeah, you know, once I started doing this, there was a new radio station that started called The Fringe here. And they were trying to get me to do their morning, weekend mornings.
Man, I would listen to you on the
Thank
radio.
You, but you know, that, I mean...
It maybe, made you start a podcast?
No. I got it because they liked my podcast.
Oh, that's great.
But you couldn't play what you wanted.
Oh, that'd be hard.
And that was like a... I was like, well, then why do you want me even there? Like, to be like, oh, here's Coldplay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Here's some really, here's a story about Coldplay. Shearwater opened for them for like 4 or 5 shows on West Coast. And they were such nice guys.
Yeah.
And I would, like, one time I tried to watch their whole show.
Yeah.
You know, because I wanted something nice to say about it. Because they were being really nice about our show, you know, and stuff. And they were just so nice. But I couldn't get through the whole show. I would just start tuning out, you know. I just could not make myself pay attention to, like, generate some nice.
What's exciting out there now that you're excited to listen to?
Oh man,
so much.
You got to check out this band, Boren and Der Club of Gore, Bohren and Der, D-E-R, Club of Gore. It's like, I think that they started out really liking the music from Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
But they were also jazz dudes, and they're German, obviously. And this music is like super elongated jazz. Like, it's played so slow that you can't even imagine how they can keep the beat.
Wow.
It's so beautiful and so amazing. And I think that You know, I always am open to hear some amazing new pop singer or singer-songwriter, but instrumental music has kind of really always been where my heart gravitates. There's a band called The Necks, and they are from Australia, like your neck. And they were a jazz band who I think got into this like minimalist stuff of the mid 20th century. And now whenever they play The Necks, it's most of the pieces are about an hour long, completely improvised, but there's no solos. So it's not jazz. It's just this sort of slowly moving, morphing instrumental music that sort of hypnotically lulls you into a different sense of time, because it is changing, but so slowly that, you know, because it's you know, obvious to say that we're all living very fast now. We're all so anything that can come along and sort of change that sense of time for us. There's something in Norway going on, and I haven't seen it, but it's called Slow TV, where they have these 6-hour programs of just like trees blowing in the breeze or something. It sounds just brilliant.
Yeah.
But this is like The Necks are kind of like the musical equivalent of that. But it's just so beautiful.
I'll check that out.
Yeah, The Necks and Boren and Der Club of Gore. Those are my two favorite things that I've discovered in recent years. Michael Girard was always turning me on to interesting stuff. He's a little, you know, he's a little too critical, the main guy in The Swans. Uh-huh. I like a lot more stuff than he likes, but we do like a lot of the same things. There's a cellist named Okyung Lee from Korea who does this just weird sort of like cello brute music where it just sounds like they're never establishes a key or a time signature. It's just strange all over the place, but so hypnotizing and captivating at the same time. She plays on the new Swans record.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, people can get your, when are you doing the show here in Austin? What's your, are you doing a release show?
You know, I think that we're going to do one at the new End of an Ear, and I think it's going to be October 8th.
Okay.
If you're listening to this, please.
Where is the new End of an Ear?
I think it's right by Radio Coffee, down there on Manchac, near Ben White.
Did this one close already?
They're closing it soon, yeah. They're going to build storage units there.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So store your stuff where End of an Ear used to be.
Yeah.
Because you can't part ways with that stuff.
Oh, it's so sad.
Yeah.
You're going to do an in-store there?
Yeah. That's great. I think we'll do an in-store at the new End of an Ear.
All right. And the record will be on CD and vinyl and on all the electronic places.
Yeah.
Vinyl, obviously, at End of an Ear in Austin. Are you going to put it at like Cactus in Houston and stuff? Or you don't?
Yeah, I hope so. I love Cactus.
Me too. I just went there on Friday. I try to get to town early when we have gigs there just so I can go there to Sig's Lagoon. You ever go to that one?
No.
Oh, Sig's Lagoon is really cool. It's next to the Continental Club there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Good place. Cool. All right. So
thank you, Johnny Gowdy.
Dude, thank you so much for being on the show. It's great to see your face.
Such a pleasure to see you.
I'm very proud of you.
Handsome face.
It was great to see all the great accolades and to see you got, they played your song on All Songs Considered and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm very happy for you. I'm glad to know you.
Oh, man, you too, Johnny Gowdy.
Yeah, man.
We've been friends like 25 or 30 years or something.
Almost 30. Yeah, I met you in 1989.
All right.
Yeah, dude.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Love you, man.
Love you too, Johnny Gowdy.
What an amazing guy, Thor Harris. His album, Thor Harris and Friends, the debut LP, comes out October 7th. And he will be on tour with Thor Harris and Friends and Adam Torres October 12th through October 30th all over the United States. Go to thorharris.org to find out when they're coming to a town near you. That guy is profoundly cool, like the real kind of cool, not like a guy that's wearing tight pants and that makes him cool. He's just cool, like profoundly cool, all right? Thor Harris, what a great guy. Hey, don't forget when you're out there checking out Thor Harris stuff, online. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher. If you don't want to fill up your phone or pad with a bunch of podcasts, you can stream them, because you stream your movies and you stream your music. Why not stream your podcast? Stitcher, Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Find it in your app store or at stitcher.com. All right, let's hear some more music from Thor Harris and Friends from their debut LP, available Friday, October 7th. That's this Friday. Go to thorharris.org to find out all you need to know about them. All right? Thanks for listening to the show. Have a great week. Let's get down. Thank you.